Welcome to the 133rd episode of the Nerdtravaganza podcast, where we're never bored of gaming. I'm Tom, happy to be back after an absence.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Cam.
I'm Chris.
And in this episode, we'll be welcoming board game designer Dr. Steve Finn to the show. But before we welcome Steve, we'll welcome our audience into a little slice of our lives with our weekly Geekly Weekly Roundup. Chris, why don't you go first?
Well, I probably did something that was really geeky, even for geeks. I managed to snag a copy of the Car Wars re-edition that just came out a couple of months ago. For those who aren't familiar with it, Car Wars was a old-style kind of game where you put your little cardboard counters on this arena that was put on a grid paper, and you basically did kind of a Mad Max Death Race 2000-style game. Played it with my son. We had a blast. His comment was that it was definitely faster than some of the older stuff that we did, because I'm trying to go with him and let him kind of know where some of the old games came from. So we did Battletech once, and he liked that, but he definitely thought Car Wars was faster.
Oh, cool.
And then the other thing is I also downloaded an app called Overdrive Media that lets you check out ebooks and audiobooks from your local library.
Oh, I like that.
It's very cool. They do some things so it still feels like a library versus feeling like maybe you're authentically pirating something. They put a time limit, and there's only just so many things that you can check out, and there's only so many of those items somehow that are digitally available from your library.
Interesting.
But I especially like it for the audiobook part because you can actually bookmark your audiobook.
Does that require a library ID? Is it integrated with the library?
It does. That is basically your password for the media app, is your library card number.
That sounds cool. Wow. I never considered the audiobook angle because those are expensive if you want to buy them.
Oh, yeah. Right now I'm listening to a Tim Powers classic on Stranger Tides, on which the fourth Pirates of the Caribbean movie is very, very loosely based on.
Ah, interesting.
If you look at the opening credits, it's there for a flash. It says, actually, I think it says loosely inspired.
Oh, that's cool. Awesome, man. Well, anything else?
Ah, that's it.
Okay. Cam, what's up with you, man?
Oh, gaming as always. At our local haunt, the Adventure Game Store, did a lot of gaming this week. Played a new game. I don't know how new it is, but I tried it for the first time, called 8-Minute Empire. 8-Minute Empire Legends, which I guess is a sequel to the original 8-Minute Empire. Played some Game of Thrones, played some Greed, played some Biblios. You know, that's always a mainstay for me. And I went to Art Basel, which is a pretty big event down here in South Florida. That was pretty interesting. Got to see a lot of art. And there was actually a few geeky-related items there, too, as well, which was pretty cool. And I was really happy to see. There was some comic book art-type stuff, some collages that were made out of different comic book-type stuff and different gaming-type things. So that was nice to see at a highbrow art exhibit such as Art Basel. Or Basel, people call it both things down here. Oh, I'm also, I guess I would be remiss in saying that I'm putting together a Nick Fury cosplay, hopefully for MegaCon coming up next year, the beginning of next year. So I did a lot of work on that over this weekend. And the last thing I would say is Green Monday. You guys know about Green Monday?
No, what's that?
Oh, Green Monday is the third biggest shopping day of the year. Behind Black Friday and I forgot what the other one is now. It's Black Friday, Cyber Monday, and then the next Monday, which was this past Monday, is Green Monday. It's basically Cyber Monday Part 2, and it has nothing to do with green, like as in green for the environment. It's just green because the color of money. they're not even trying to disguise it as anything, you know, altruistic. I picked up the Harry Potter Blu-ray set, all 8 movies, for a ridiculous price. I didn't really want to support Green Monday just because I'm kind of I'm kind of shocked at how ridiculous it is, but I couldn't pass up Harry Potter, and you know, that's what they bank on, I guess.
What if they were even more blatant about it and called it like Money Rake Monday or something?
I'm sure millions of people would still buy.
That's awesome, man. Does that sum it up for you?
Yeah, I think that's about it for me.
Cool. Brian, over to you.
My week was very Kickstarter related. Last Thursday, we played a game I got about a month ago, but just hadn't made it into rotation yet, Tiny Epic Kingdoms, which I think has a lot of the elements of some more serious games, but is really, really small and really, really simple. And I think it took us like half an hour to learn and play it. Secondly, I got in a game, not from Kickstarter, but from Indiegogo that I had backed long ago. Schoolgirls Love Tentacles. It's a card game about the misunderstood relationships between tentacle monsters and schoolgirls.
Aww.
Tentacle monsters feel they've gotten a bad rep, so this displays the softer side.
The softer core side?
And I'm looking forward to playing that in the coming weeks.
In Let's the brown paper ever?
People brown think paper. Terrible things. It's really not that mature. I think Kansume Goddess was way worse.
Oh, yeah.
Kansume Goddess was pretty risque. So some definite gaming going on. Anything else?
That's it for me, mostly.
Okay, we will paper up the windows to the back room of the Adventure Game Store when we play that game so nobody can see it.
Like the blindfold the dragon?
Yes. He, his innocent eyes don't need to see that. Okay, I guess that brings it around to me. I did have fun joining you guys at our weekly game night this past Thursday, where I got to enjoy Biblios, a game credited to tonight's guest. Really fun game, pretty easy to learn, my type of game. We also played Game of Thrones. Unfortunately, I had a kind of terrific head cold, which was making it really hard to concentrate. And for that reason, the Dornish did not make it out of Dorne the entire game. But I would like to play that again as Dorne with six players so that I have like human opponents on either side and see if I can fare better. Because regardless of the fact that I wasn't really in tip-top shape to play, the game left an impression. I did like it. So I would like to play that again.
I'd like to point out, too, that having most of Dorne at the end is still a great success.
Yay! Yeah, I was able to not lose any territory, which I guess kind of fits with the Dornish's, the role of the Dornish men in history. They stayed the Targaryens as they tried to conquer their kingdom.
Yeah, they are the Afghanistan of Westeros.
They really are, yes, correct. Wow, that's a great parallel. The Targaryen prince that conquered them even wrote like this self-congratulating history about how he conquered them, but he like led like just a failed campaign. It's like the Russians patting themselves on the back for invading Afghanistan. Perfect. Right, so apart from that, I've been playing some D&D 5th edition. I am actually running a campaign. And if you guys will permit me to plug something, I am doing that on a podcast I'm doing called Party of Five. And I advise you guys to check it out. I voice act to the extent that I can, wow. Which is humiliating. So if you have any interest in that.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah. So Party of Five, check that out. Doing a little bit of video gaming. Been playing Destiny, which is kind of the number one hit game of the century, which I find just kind of . And playing some Kingdom Hearts Chain of Memories on the HD Remix Collection on the PS3. And I just recently got the second high-definition Kingdom Hearts collection for the PlayStation 3. So I'm not sure how big you guys are into video games, but these are HD remixes of old games. That's it. That's all I've been up to. I do understand, though, that in my absence, the weekly roundup has been joined by a new segment called News Stravaganza. Is that true?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay, well, that is news to me, and as such, I will refrain from participating this time and let you guys show me how it's done. So, Chris, why don't you lead off?
Okay, well, add a couple of things. There is a 7-minute clip out for a movie called Predestination, which is actually a motion picture based off the Robert A. Heinlein short story, All You Zombies.
Hmm.
Which if you actually have read that short story, you know that there's going to be a really crazy twist ending to that movie. On top of that, I heard some pretty cool news that Mark Hamill is going to reprise his role as the Trickster for the new Flash TV series. He did the Trickster in the old Flash TV series. And as you know, that the actor who did the Flash in the 90s is now the Flash's dad in the new TV series.
That was surprising news, given that Mark Hamill is playing a much more high-profile role. It's interesting that he's also taking this on.
Well, the Trickster, everybody kind of thinks that is the baby step he took to becoming the Joker for all the animated stuff in Batman.
There's
that, kind of that link there. And then for Wargaming type stuff, Osprey Publishing, they've kind of gone from being the sort of the military recognition guy to doing their own games, and they're putting out something called Frostgrave, I'm hoping to look forward to, because it has a very Mordenheim feel to it, Mordenheim being kind of a cool fantasy skirmish game where you only had needed five figures to do it. You even had a campaign system so these guys would get improved. You could do like these little 30-minute games, and over a few hours you could basically see this team kind of blossom and kick ass. And then for me, probably the biggest thing is we are getting basically the Gotham TV series squared. David Goyer and the Sci-Fi Channel are going to put out Krypton, where it is Superman's grandfather.
Interesting. Good news.
I don't know what to really think about the Krypton thing, to be honest. I think it's almost like, couldn't you just do your own space opera dynasty without having to like slap Krypton on it?
I mean, I don't know if I wanted to see what the main players in Gotham were doing as kids by the same token. So how could this be? I don't want to say worse. I'm not condemning Gotham, but yeah, this might have legs. Anything else? That's a bundle of news.
Thanks.
Okay. I think that's it for Chris. Cam, what about you?
I've got a few, but I'll keep them short and sweet. Just going back to last week's episode, Tom, you weren't here, but we talked about Grumpy Cat and its holidays and her holiday special. We didn't even know it was – I didn't even know it was a girl. I thought it was a guy this whole time. Apparently, Grumpy Cat has made $95 million in the past 2 years. So kudos to Grumpy Cat and whoever is raking in those millions. Well, I have a lot of Sony news. Start with the good news, I guess. They're coming out with a PS4 that's sort of skinned as the original PlayStation. They're making a limited run on them, about 12,300 total, I think they're going to make. The first one sold on eBay recently for $15,000, north of $15,000.
Wow.
Which is crazy. So that's the good news. Bad news is hacked again. So they might be making new consoles, but you know, everyone that's on there is getting hacked. I'm sure most everyone has heard about, you know, the movies that were leaked, the celebrity emails and, you know, phone numbers and all kinds of stuff that was leaked. Apparently now they're saying that the icing on the cake was that they had a folder titled Password, which, you know, anyone in the computer game knows is a cardinal sin to name any folder passwords and put anything of value in that folder. Good news and bad news for Sony, mostly bad. And the last thing I had was, I guess, sticking with the theft theme. If anyone is a fan of you know, buying books on Amazon, which I know I am and I know some of you guys are, I guess there's this guy out there. He's just taking other people's works. Like, he'll just grab a George R.R. Martin book or anyone's book, and he's just uploading it onto Amazon as his own work and selling it, and he's making money. And people are downloading them, and Amazon is not catching it quick enough, I guess. People are getting pissed. It seems to be a pretty big problem. I guess he's done it 37 times, and he's made several thousand dollars. It's pretty fun. And his name is Jay Cute, JayQute. So look for him. Don't look for him. Either way, just buyer beware if you're buying on Amazon.
That would seem on the surface of it to be illegal.
Oh, very illegal. But, you know, Amazon has sort of a liberal policy on letting independent authors upload stuff. And I guess their monitoring software needs to catch up a little bit.
Yeah, I guess so. Wow. Before I toss things over to Brian, I have a question. Do you know if the people who brought down Sony were the Lizard Hacking Group or whatever they were called?
No, it was a group called – hold on. Let me tell you right now. It was a group called the Guardians of Peace.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
Yes. They are the ones that are taking – the Guardians of Peace are taking credit for the hack. But, you know, Sony's been hacked so many times, you know, over the last few months. You know, who knows at this point?
I guess they want peace in the console wars. That's why they're trying to take down one faction.
Must be.
Is Sony now like somebody's rite of passage as a hacker?
Well, I think the mistake they made was that they tried to deny it in the very beginning, saying, oh, no, we didn't get hacked. And then, of course, that's like throwing the gauntlet down. Then everyone and their mother wants to prove that they can or they did, you know? And so now they're taking it from all angles.
My favorite crackpot theory is that this is all North Korea trying to stop that stupid interview movie.
Oh, Sony Pictures put that out?
Yup.
Wow, that's funny. That's funny to think.
And the last thing, Benedict Cumberbatch confirmed as Doctor Strange for all for all the ladies and the comic book lovers out there.
That is good news. And let's hope Brian can follow suit with another batch of good news. What's up, man?
The only thing exciting that has not been covered that I saw pop up this week just happened today, apparently. The Pirate Bay is taken down and hackers of the world have been defeated.
I'm sure. Pirate Bay's really down?
Pirate Bay is currently down. The French raided their front end, apparently.
Oh, so it's a denial of service attack or something. They didn't like raid the server room and steal their assets or anything.
Well, no, they raided the one server that redirects traffic to all their real servers.
But they physically seized hardware.
Yes.
Oh, wow. Wow. All right, man. Strike a blow for the beleaguered content creators. How do you feel about that, Brian?
I think it doesn't even matter how I feel. They'll be back. Everyone's predicting less than 24 hours. They might even be back up by now. I haven't checked in about an hour because of the episode. So,
yeah, I would agree, especially if the actual machines that underpin that whole operation are in some unassailable fortress somewhere. Yeah, I see them coming back online in fairly short order.
This has happened before. And it'll probably just keep happening. I mean, they're technically not in any country, so how can you police them?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm not really sure how I feel about Pirate Bay. I don't use it myself, but part of me still likes an untamed and uncontrollable part of the internet.
I agree. I think if it were named anything else but Pirate, I would like it considerably less.
if it was like Leet Wares, you wouldn't be into it?
No.
Me neither. Cam, where do you come down on that? Actually, I want everybody's opinion.
For me, Pirate Bay is it's not available in my country yet, but I want to check it out. And as soon as it is in my country, I'll buy it legal.
I like that. That's a very good rationale, yes.
Yeah, especially like way back when, Doctor Who was months and months ahead of Sci-Fi Channel before they went to BBC America or something like that. It was like, for a while I couldn't catch up with my Doctor Who, so streaming was the only way to do it. And since then, I really haven't really streamed or torrented that much.
Cool, so it kind of puts pressure on the creators to localize and stuff.
Yeah, actually, now that I think about it, I also, it was like some out-of-print games of the role-playing variety before, PDFs got really big. That was the only way you could really find them if they were out of print and nobody was putting them anywhere. And now that they're legally available, I buy them legit.
Awesome. And what about you, Cam?
Yeah, Chris, I sort of fall in the same camp as you. I have a professional license as well, so if anyone's listening, I always buy legally licensed content. Look, morally, I feel like, hey, someone created something, you should pay for it. If it's if it's a good product, you should pay a fair price for it. But on the other hand, practically speaking, even if they're down for good, there's just going to be another site that pops up and does the same exact thing. So I think at this point, the content creators probably need to seek a different strategy.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, never mind whatever your personal ethics might be. A sizable segment of the population views these intangible products as something that it's more okay to steal than like a car off the lot, right?
So, right, exactly.
There it is.
Pirate Bay goes down and J-Cute rises to take its place.
J-Cute.
Yeah, but J-Cute's actually making money off of it as compared to Pirate Bay just sharing the love.
If if I ever lose my day job, I'm going to go into porn and J-Cute will be my name.
Oh, J-Cute is a wonderful porn name because you're not making any boastful claims. You're kind of just like, yeah, I'm J-Cute. I mean, moderate your expectations.
Exactly. And believe me, I need to, unfortunately.
That's funny.
You are an honest, honest man.
He's JQ, man. JQ tells no lies.
JQ tells it how it is.
He stretches no truths. All right. So, okay, with all of that self-deprecation out of the way, I think we can move on and welcome our guest, Dr. Steve Finn, and talk about some games.
Hey, Dr. Finn, it's Cam. Nice to finally talk to you.
Hey, Cam, how you doing?
Good, good. How you feeling?
I still have this crazy cough, but we'll see what happens.
All right.
I don't know. My son has it, too. It's just not leaving. It's been a couple weeks.
Yeah, but, it's been going around here like crazy, gone. Too. Yeah, we really appreciate you taking the time, though.
Yeah, no worries.
Good. Everybody get
I
your flu shots.
Being interviewed. I already got them.
Get a refund.
Apparently, they don't. That's not a good match this year.
Yeah.
Okay, I guess let's commence so that the good doctor can heal. I don't know how you say heal thyself. Anyway, I guess I will start things off. We all played Biblios the other night at our weekly game night, and it was my first time playing it, and I was rather impressed with that game. And I think my co-host joined me in that sentiment. Does anybody disagree?
Oh, absolutely not. we love that game.
One of my favorites lately.
Yeah, that's been highly enjoyable. So I wanted to start things off with that. And guys, have you played any other of Steve's games that I haven't played? I think Biblios was my first exposure.
I have not played any other games. I am a backer of Institute for Magical Arts. I don't know. I don't remember when the ship time is, but I look forward to getting that. And I'm also, as you know, Steve, a Biblios dice backer, and I'm looking forward to that as well.
Great.
Cool. So there we have it. And I guess I'll start with the first actual question now that we've got that gotten all that out of the way. You have a PhD, and as somebody who only went as far as his master's, I'm always intrigued by that. Would you mind sharing with us your educational background?
Sure. Well, I have a PhD in philosophy. I am currently a philosophy professor, and the game company is something I just do kind of in my spare time. I got a PhD in philosophy from Villanova. I also have a master's in philosophy and a master's in liberal studies.
Wow.
It took me a long time, probably about 12 years to get through grad school, but I made it out.
Woohoo! Made it out as a comment.
And I actually got a job being a philosopher, which I think is even more impressive.
Yeah, that's the real trick, right?
Yes.
Few people can boast a career in philosophy and a a company on the side that it successfully makes quality games. So I think you have accomplished a lot in life, it seems.
That's good.
I'll let Cam take the next question.
Steve, I was just curious as to how Biblios Dice came about, because we're seeing a trend nowadays of a lot of games sort of going to the dice mechanic. Like Pandemic just came out with their dice game, and I was just wondering how that, you know, what the genesis of that was, and also, you know, just for those who haven't seen the Kickstarter yet, you know, if you could just, you know, maybe just talk about Biblios Dice a little bit, let us know what the basic mechanics are, and, you know, maybe what the difference is between the original game and the new game.
Sure. Well, there's actually a lot here for me to talk about, because I think once I talk about Biblios Dice, I automatically have to talk a little bit about the history of Biblios itself, and which had gone through a number of name changes. When I lived in Seattle, I now live in New York, but when I lived in Seattle 5-6 years ago, and about 10 years ago, actually, I made Biblios, and I had a card making company because I was trying to make my own playing cards so I could design my own games. And it turned out I found this neat way to make cards. And I had a local print shop. I had this big Kluge die cutting machine in my garage. So I got sidetracked for a little while and I was making people custom cards. But then I got back on track with making games and I made Biblios, which back then was called Scripts and Scribes, or actually its earliest version was called Scriptorium. Then I discovered there was already a game by that name, so then I changed it to Scripts and Scribes, and then Aiello picked it up, and they renamed it Biblios. So that was a few years ago, and I decided I wanted to make my own dice version of the game, so I had to see if I could get permission from Aiello to use the name Biblios, but at the time, they didn't give that to me. So I made my own self-published version before I even knew about Kickstarter. That was called Scripts and Scribes, the dice game. And anyone who has that can see that it's quite utilitarian, especially in art style. And that game just really popped out of my head for some reason. I think it was, I remember what it was. I had previously really disliked playing games with dice. And then I tried Knizia's Ra, the dice game. And for some reason, I really took to that. And I said, wow, this is neat. It's a dice version of Ra, and I like Ra. And so I said, oh, I should make a dice version of Scripts and Scribes. So I just sat down one day and said, how can I make a dice version? And the game just popped out, and I made very few rule changes. It was one of the only times I've ever made a game where it just came out almost complete right from the start. I still remember going over to my friend's house and getting him to play a whole bunch of games with me. You know, then I did some more play testing with a number of people, but I think I might have rushed the game a little and probably didn't play test Scripts and Scribes dice game enough. And then I also, because I was using my own money, I really probably skimped a little also on the artwork. You know, I paid some guy in England, I think like $500 to do all of the artwork for everything. And so I self-published that. And only, it took me probably like 6 years to sell the 1,000 copies that I had made. But about, I don't know, 5 months ago or so, I got permission from Aiello to use Biblios in the title. So I'm very thankful to them for letting me do that. And then I decided I was going to just make a big change to the game. So I hired a new artist. I got really good, what I think to be really good artwork this time. And did a whole bunch of play testing. This game has probably received more play testing than I've ever played any other game. And so I'm pretty confident this time I overcame some of the problems that I had with the previous game. Some of the problems, I guess, of Scripts and Scribes, the dice game, a lot of people still like that game. And I think it is a decent game the way it is. But there was a couple things that just seemed not ideal to me. One was I had an auction mechanic that an auction could just randomly occur at the roll of a die. So there could be, you know, with some dice rolls, there could be like six auctions in a row. Because there was a one-third chance there'd be one type of auction or two types of auctions. So the auctions could, you know, you could play a whole game and there'd be no auctions. So I decided I needed some pacing mechanism. So the Scripts and Scribes, the dice game now has what's called the market track. And there's a little mule that moves, a mule and a monk move from the monastery to the town. And the mule will always move 1 to 3 spaces and, you know, it's like 7 or 8 spaces long. So now I know that now people can kind of plan that the auction is coming up. You can see it progressing. You don't know exactly when it's going to happen, but you know it's going to happen. And when it does happen, then you know there's going to be a little bit more time for the next one. So that's one of the major changes. Another major change is the fact that I got rid of the gold as a victory point condition. Part of that reason was in Scripts and Scribes, the dice game, as you move up the tracks, you collected gold. So if you won an auction, you'd move up tracks and collect more gold. And there was a mechanic that was kind of like the rich get richer. So you had to spend a lot of money on auctions, but a lot of times if you had a lot of money, you would then get a lot of money in return. So I didn't really care about that mechanic as much, but it, you know, after playing it a ton more, I decided I didn't like the rich get richer aspect of it. So that was gone, and now it's been replaced with victory points. And then I've also added in a neat mechanic for two players where there's an imaginary third player. And I know that games that have this imaginary third player for two players, a lot of times I don't like them because they end up being kind of cumbersome or you forget. So I try to make it as simple as possible. And I think I did a pretty good job with who I call Cadfell as the imaginary third player, which is from a PBS mystery, a medieval mystery. That's where I got that name from.
Very cool.
So those are the major changes, and that's kind of like the history of the game.
Excellent. And, you know, you brought up so much. Let me start with, I guess, Aiello. They were the final publishers of Biblios, or were they the first publishers? Because I know there were several publishers when it came to-
there was only me. And then is it Aiello? I don't even know how to pronounce it. I've never actually spoken to them about it. But, yeah, so they – they license the game from me now. And so, as long as they continue to manufacture it, they will have the right to continue to make it. But if they let it lapse for a certain amount of time, then the licensing rights come back to me.
Gotcha.
No, they've been the only ones. No one else has ever published Biblios other than them.
Gotcha. Well, it's funny because the way we got into, the way we even found out about Biblios was a rep from Yellow, however it's pronounced, demoed the game for us. And we just fell in love with it. I bought a copy immediately, and we've been playing it ever since. Yeah, I mean, they're doing a pretty good job even, you know, years later still marketing that game. I guess that sort of transitions to my next question, which is what do you see as the difference now by doing Kickstarter for Biblios Dice as opposed to publishing the game back, you know, seven, 8 years ago on your own through a big publishing house?
Well, when I did it on my own, I wasn't through a publishing house. So I did it with my own money, and I just found a manufacturer in China to do it. So basically, and at that time, I wasn't really gainfully employed as I could have been. As a philosopher, of course, it wasn't, you know, I wasn't rolling in cash. But so I decided I would just take a chance and spend my own money to make a game. The reason that Kickstarter now makes a lot of sense is just it's kind of obvious to me that before I put the money into something, a substantial amount of money into, you know, $10,000 or $20,000 into having something made, I could see what the demand for the game is. So what could happen is, you know, I could try to, one method is to go out and try to license my games to other people, or the other method, which I've been doing now, is to self-publish. So Dr. Finn's Games now just, you know, I'm cranking out at least one to two games a year. The Kickstarter seems to always be successful. I haven't had any of these that, you know, break away from just barely making over the funding goal. You know, I'm hoping at some point I'm going to have one of those Kickstarters that really kicks it, you might say, and gets it into like number of stretch goals and all that. But each Kickstarter I have, I get more and more people involved in it, more and more people back it. So I like the progress that I've been making, at least with Kickstarter. But obviously, if you self-publishing is a very risky thing, if you didn't do Kickstarter, because you could easily end up with a basement full of games that you can't sell and you're in debt. With Kickstarter, that prevents that from happening.
Absolutely.
Well, what do you think are the elements of a successful Kickstarter?
It depends on what you mean by success. The really wild successful ones now seem to be one of two types. One, they either have a theme that just for some reason is really hot, like, you know, whatever, zombies, or they have a lot of miniatures, or they have things, you know, just some sort of unique, trinkets or whatever you want to call it, go with it. Or there's also, at least with games, larger companies are now getting in, like Queen's Games. They have some huge ones where they'll take a fairly established designer like Stefan Feld and then make, I think it was Amerigo or something, you know, and they can have an extremely successful Kickstarter. But for people who I think who are like me, who are just, you know, trying to break into the gaming world and publish my own games as an independent designer and publisher, I think that a lot of success comes from just plugging away and building up a bunch of people beforehand to be interested in your games. I know that for me, the fact that Aiello published Biblios and that Biblios is a fairly popular game gave me already a solid grounding to use Kickstarter. So my first Kickstarter game was Gunrunners, but that was already after I had a pretty decent sized email list. You know, I had a large number of followers already who liked my game designs. And so I think a lot of successful Kickstarters happen because you've done a lot of the groundwork and you've already built up a lot of interest in your games. I mean, the way that I got Biblios started was when it was called Scriptorium. I sent out like 10 copies that I made myself to Board Game Geek people, and there was a couple of people that were really wild about it. And so Aiello ended up contacting me. I didn't even have to pitch the game. They said, we found out about this game, we'd like to publish it. And so that's how I got my foot in the door, so to speak. Now I think there's just, you know, with Kickstarter, you have to make the project look good. You have to have some good stretch goals. If anything, the game has to be really well play tested beforehand, and you really have to show that you've done a lot of work and put some effort into it. You know, make sure that you have good artwork and things like that. So I don't feel I've had successful Kickstarters, meaning I've reached the funding goal, but how to make that uber successful Kickstarter, I'm still trying to figure that one out.
Well, just to let you know, my definition of a successful Kickstarter is getting funded.
Well, yes. Then the successful thing for me, then, at least what's worked for me most, is just building up a reputation for being a good game designer and building up a what you might call a fan base. I mean, I have a lot of people who basically say, anytime that you make a game, I'm going to back it. You know, there's probably 100 people, 150 people that will say that. And so that good start, you know, every time I've had a Kickstarter, like within 2 days or so, I'm now getting, you know, 200 backers. Because a lot of people are excited about the games that are coming out, and that, you know, they follow me on Facebook and Twitter, and, you know, they're excited about things that I'm doing. So I think it's, for me, I can't tell you what the success is. It's other than just, like, you know, plugging away and slowly building up a fan base. But I guess also having a good product. I mean, I wouldn't have a fan base if I didn't think I was making, you know, decent games that people enjoy.
Absolutely. I'm firmly in that whatever you make, I'm going to back camp. Brian,
I love it.
Brian, what about you? You have any questions?
I do, actually. I'm very curious how you feel about Kickstarter, because I think about a year ago, it really hit a peak, and then some companies started either delivering poor product or delivering late product. And of course, there's been a couple of just crash and burn projects where they just delivered nothing. So I've seen a little bit of backlash, I think, in the community for not wanting to back projects. But overall, I'm curious if that's affected you in any way.
Well, I almost feel like if I'm going to continue the way that I'm doing, I need to do crowdfunding. Now, I've thought about setting up my own crowdfunding site. You know, I guess there's a lot of platforms out there in the public domain that you could just set up your own. But I can't imagine doing this without some form of crowdfunding, you know, whether it's Kickstarter or not. So for me, it's a necessity. When I think about Kickstarter, the thing that I would say aggravates me, first of all, as someone who does back games, I back 13, you know, I'm not a huge backer of a lot of products. The quality of the games that I get, I have to say I'm not completely thrilled with. So a lot of times I will back a project because the game looks interesting or I just like the idea of the game. But then when I get the game, I'd say I'm underwhelmed. Sometimes there's been a couple projects that I've gotten that I really like. I play a lot now with my kids. Buccaneer Bones, for example, is a game that I play all the time with my kids because it was a neat short little game that can fit into my pocket and I can carry it around. So I think the quality is somewhat mixed because sometimes people haven't play tested their games enough. But overall, the thing that I would say annoys me now about Kickstarter the most are when large established game companies come in to use it. Now, some people might say I'm somewhat established, but because I've had so many Kickstarters, but I'm still just, you know, I'm just one person pretty much doing this. You know, I have some help with friends and other, you know, fans and other game designers, you know, give me a lot of tips and reading Stonemaier Games, how to run Kickstarters. You know, he did a great job there. Jamie did a great job giving advice and continues to do so. But these large companies that come in that have huge budgets that make their Kickstarters look really professional make it more difficult for people like me to get in there and do it. Especially now, like, I don't even know, there's probably like 200 active game Kickstarters out there. So, you know, that might be good or bad, and it just means that I have to do a better job, I guess, promoting my own. I guess that kind of wraps up what I think about Kickstarter. As an actual service, I think it's a really, you know, crowdfunding is a great thing. It will be unfortunate if there's a big backlash that people don't want to do it anymore. But I'm hoping that I've established a strong enough fan base that I will be able to continue to do it, whether it's on Kickstarter or some other crowdfunding, or if it's even just doing pre-orders on my own website.
We happen to host a weekly discussion about either one Kickstarter project or crowdfunding in general on our site. And I just happened to have looked at this recently. There are almost 600 projects in the game category on Kickstarter this week.
Yeah, there we go.
That's interesting. Now, Steve, I'd like your opinion on this. I have asked this of a few people. This is one of my favorite questions for anybody involved in the games industry. We just discussed just a plethora of projects just in the crowdfunding space. I think if you walk into any game store, you're going to see a huge selection of games these days. Do you think the recent growth in the industry, just this sort of explosion of offerings, indicates that we've kind of done a cultural shift and more people are gaming and it's here to stay? Or do you think there's a possibility we're in some sort of a bubble that could pop?
No, I have no idea. I mean, that's the evidence. I, as a philosopher and a professor, I only like to make claims that I have some sort of good evidence for. I mean, I can give you a hunch in what I feel, but I have no idea if it's actually accurate. The reality, as far as whether there's a bubble, there won't be enough. I don't know if Kickstarter can maintain or crowdfunding can maintain supporting that many projects. I don't know how many of those 600 are going to be successful, but I would say that I can't imagine that it's just going to continue to sustain itself and have numerous projects succeed. I just think that it will still be harder. It will just make it harder for people to succeed. But as far as whether the gaming industry is exploding, I really think there's a lot more people playing games, especially of the games, you know, Eurotype and Euro games and, you know, these kind of casual strategy games that like I try to design. And I do think there probably is a movement away from video games and trying to bring people back to together into communities by using board games instead. So I know that's been, I'm pretty sure that's continuing on the rise. Cause as I just live, I just see more and more people getting involved in it. Like there's a game, really it's a comic book store here, but it's also a game store, came in and now they have a Saturday Night Gaming. And in the 2 years that they've been open, you know, you could just see the crowd of people. There's more and more people coming. There seems to be more. Obviously, there's more and more events happening on more and more projects on Kickstarter. And it just seems like there's more and more people taking up this hobby. So I don't know if there's going to be a bubble bursting. It just might mean that with the variety that's out there, it's just going to be harder and harder to be more successful. And there will probably be a lot of Kickstarter projects that aren't successful because they just can't compete. And there'll also be a lot of games that will only see one printing. that might happen a lot more because there's so many new ideas and people coming out with new things that a lot of good games now aren't even being reprinted because there's so many new games coming out.
So definitely a crowded marketplace for producers, but for consumers, for what you perceive as a growing consumer base, it sounds like a great time to be into tabletop gaming.
Perhaps. It's also kind of confusing as a consumer. It's hard to, you know, figure out what to buy. You know, you have to I do a ton of research. I'm always looking on Board Game Geek, and before I buy any game, I'm going to look at reviews. And there also seems to be an explosion of people like what you're doing of, you know, podcasts and blogs and reviews. And some people seem to be even like making a business out of it, which is kind of amazing.
Yeah, we've fallen well short of our $1 million revenue mark this year, but we think we might hit it next year.
Yeah, well, don't give up hope.
So, Cam, you yourself do pretty in-depth research before you purchase, do you not?
I absolutely do. YouTube, Board Game Geek, all the standard resources. I think that's great. I love that there's so many resources now that you can go to and find anything about anything, you know, including tabletop games.
Agreed.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I actually, for me, my direction in researching for games now goes to the point where I try to look for the after reviews, where somebody says, I've played this game for 3 months. This is what I think about it now after I played it for a while.
Oh, but then you don't get it right when it comes out.
Yeah.
But I also think that's not really fair, because if you spend $50 on a game and you get 3 months of ecstatic bliss out of it, pretty good $50.
True.
Yeah, I mean, when you actually compare it to other things like movies, if I get a game and I play it, say, 5 times with my kids, and I spend $30 on it, I almost feel like I've already got my money back. You know, I could go to one movie with my kids, and it's over in 2 hours, and I've just spent $40. So, yeah, to get my money's worth, I feel like I don't have to actually play it a ton, because games are very expensive, it seems like. But when you actually compare it to other things, the way that people spend money in other realms, they're really inexpensive.
I have a weekly game night
with my friends, and you know, I pull out a game, and if 5 of us play it and we have a great time, that's almost enough to warrant spending the money on it.
I always have these preconceived notions about our guests, and I'm probably off the mark on this one, because it sounded, Steve, like your foray into game development came out of a love of gaming. And for some reason, I was hoping you were working on some awesome research project.
Theme of Helios did come from the fact that I studied philosophy, and I was interested in the Middle Ages for a while and medieval philosophy, but it did not come out of that. There's actually, I have a bigger love of my life other than gaming. Well, obviously my wife and family, but there's Ultimate Frisbee is my game of choice. And so I've been playing Ultimate Frisbee for 28 years at a national level. And that's what I've been, probably what I love the most. And so my philosophy, when I studied philosophy, I did study philosophy of sports. Now there is a little bit of interaction between people who study philosophy of sports and people who think about the philosophy of gaming. So I have done some research in the whole concept of just play and what it means to play, and trying to define, you know, what kind of attitude we should take when we play games. So actually there is I wouldn't say that philosophy gave birth to my love of gaming, but what I would do say is that after playing sports for so long and being into this whole notion of entering into like a play world that we enter into, my philosophical interest did turn, because of my interest in games and sports, towards questions about, you know, what's the appropriate attitude to take when one enters into this play world, you know, whether it's a sport or whether it's a tabletop game or whether it's a video game or something. So I have done some research. I haven't published on anything in gaming, or I actually have published in philosophy of sports, but I've never published anything in philosophy of gaming, and I don't think I'm going to spend a whole lot of time in that area with regard to my research. But there's some interesting questions to be raised when it comes to gaming.
I would say
especially about how we should behave at the table.
Wow, we would love a list of acceptable behavior. If you could publish that, you'd be doing us all a favor, I think.
Yes, well, there's a philosophical notion, what is it called? It's like, it's from this book called Sport, Play, and Ethical Reflection, and it's about taking an ironic attitude towards sports. But I have the same attitude about games. And this ironic attitude is this. When you enter into a game or a sport, you should enter into it as if it means everything, that you are trying to play competitively, playing it wholeheartedly to win. But at the same time, you have to recognize that it really means nothing at all. So you have to be able to hold these two contrasting or paradoxical thoughts together, because a proper attitude would be one where you're really in the game and you're trying hard to play it according to its rules, but you're not so concerned about winning that you'll do things like cheat to So there, I left philosophical for the last question.
Beautiful, beautiful.
Guys, I just had one last question. Steve, do you have any games on the horizon other than Biblios Dice that you're working on that you can tell us, or is that top secret?
Yeah, I actually have two games. One is called Foragers, which has been the hardest game for me to design because it's just gone through so many iterations, and it's a tile placement game. You move around, you pick up resources, and then you go back and trade them in for victory points. And the board slowly expands as you play. The other game that I have is actually, interestingly, my 8-year-old son came up with the main basic part of the game. You know, he said he wanted to create a game, and then I just tweaked it. And it's a pretty interesting game. We don't have a name for it yet, but we're going to have a space theme. And it will be similar, it's a very surface similarity to Biblios Dice in that there's multiple tracks and you're rolling dice to move up the tracks. But the mechanism for doing so and the power cards that are involved are very different. So it has this kind of surface similarity to Crypt and Scribes Dice or Biblios Dice. But after that, it's only a surface similarity. But it will be a light game. Foragers is probably going to be the most involved game I've made and the most Euro game kind of feel to it. It'll be, you know, it'll probably be a longer game than my typical games, probably like 45 minutes to an hour at the minimum. But it's still, you know, I'm still trying to make light games that are fun, easy to explain. But that can be over fairly quickly because I don't have a lot of time myself, and so I'd rather play games that are like a half an hour to 45 minutes long usually. Although I do like to pull out a good two hour game occasionally as well.
Here.
I'm working on those two games.
Very nice. We look forward to those.
Thanks.
Yeah. I think with that question asked, Steve, you have probably looked forward to getting on with your evening. And I think we can cut you loose at this point so you can go play some games.
Well, it's actually so I can go to sleep.
A game of sleep,
but,
yes.
You should all play some games. And, you know, go play Biblios. That's what I say.
Definitely.
Get a quick game in before you go to bed.
Yep, absolutely. Well, Steve, thanks for being on. We really appreciate your time, and we look forward to your future offerings. We will link up everything we have discussed here. If you happen to have any online resources for any upcoming projects, we're happy to share those. And if you've got anything awesome coming up, you want to come on again, we'd love to have you. You've been a great guest, and we appreciate you being here.
All right. Well, thank you for the opportunity to be on. I look forward to hearing your shows more now.
Excellent.
Thanks. Have a great night.
Thanks, Steve.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Okay, so that concludes our interview with Dr. Steve Finn. What did you guys think? I thought it went well. I thought it was a very interesting guest.
Yo, no, absolutely. Can't wait for Biblios Dice to come out.
I'm looking forward to Biblios Dice. I am also looking forward to correcting some of my past mistakes. He has the option this time of picking up some of his old games so that they can ship together. I'm definitely in on that.
Oh, yeah, he's including add-ons. Which ones would you want to add on?
I'm going to get Let Them Eat Shrimp, and I think I'm going to pick up... Shoot, I forgot the name of it.
Institute?
Yeah, Institute of Magical Technology. How does it go?
Institute for the Magical Arts.
Magical Arts, that's it,
Yeah, I backed that one.
So these are games you might have missed last go around, but you can select them as add-on options for the current Kickstarter?
Yeah, he sort of bundles them in, and you can just throw them in as add-ons and not have to pay extra shipping and all that stuff. He gives a good – and he knocks a little bit off the retail.
That's cool.
Yeah, definitely.
I think we're going to adopt his ironic philosophy to gaming, and that is going to be the philosophy we adopt at our gaming night. So we're going to have that posted on the door. Play like this is important, but remember that it's not.
Absolutely.
Because if there's one thing I absolutely cannot abide, whether it's done consciously and with malicious intent or through just kind of subconscious carelessness, it's cheating at playing a stupid game that means nothing. That really gets on my nerves.
Yeah, I mean, really, who cares?
Nothing is at stake, nor is there any reason for anger. You have lost nothing if you've lost. This is just a game for fun. There are no stakes.
Well, I'll take it even a step further. I mean, I understand some games it's sort of called for, like, you know, for instance, Game of Thrones. But, you know, I don't even like when people go out of their way just to dagger you, just to, you know, I mean, you know what I mean? Like, Tom, yeah. I'm sure you know exactly what I mean.
I do.
And what I'm referring to. But, I mean, why, we're all there just trying to play a game, have some fun, be social. You know, why do you got to go out of your way to be a dick?
Yeah. It brings out gaming or anything competitive brings out some of the ugly parts of, from the recesses of people's personalities, I think.
I like Steve's maxim a little bit more, but I've heard it well said before. The goal is to win. The point is to have fun.
There you go. Absolutely. There you go. And I need to adopt the first part of his maxim because I take it so not seriously that if I'm being just like, if I can see a slaughter coming 10 turns down the road, I'm willing to just concede. Like, okay, unless you just enjoy beating me, we can all see where this is going. I don't know if I'm a little too logical or practical or pragmatic or what, but I'm usually ready to just throw in the towel. And it's not that I'm a sore loser, but I feel like I'm wasting time. Like, all right, I'm going to lose. What are we doing? You know? But I forget that the play and the unfolding of the game, even when victory seems to be, you know, imminent, you know, that's where the fun comes in for a lot of people. So I need to be better about that. And I think that was my biggest takeaway, that philosophy from the philosophy major / world beating game designer.
PhD,
was awesome.
Game designer, professor.
Yeah. Yeah. And as with every guest, I also come away wishing I was winning more at life because, man, we have some cool guests that are doing a lot of cool stuff, man. And Dr. Steve Finn, I would count among them.
You're a winner in my book, Tom.
Oh, thanks, Cam. I appreciate it. You're the number one winner, and I'm kind of a winner. Brian hands out the winner's crown. That's how he's the biggest of all winners.
He's the the grand poobah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it occurs to me that if our listeners want to be winners week in and week out, one way they could move toward that goal would be by subscribing to our podcast on iTunes or using whatever other podcatching software they happen to use. Or if they are more streaming-minded, perhaps they should check us out on Stitcher.
And speaking of backing Kickstarter projects, if listeners want to find our back episodes, they can check out our website, nerdstravaganza.com. And if you'd like to email us for more information, it's nerdstravaganza@gmail.com.
And if you find being a winner just a little too much responsibility, you can at least associate with winners, liking us on Facebook, following us on Twitter and Instagram, joining our Google Circle, and joining the Nerdstravaganza HQ Facebook group.
And with all that said, listeners, remember to play ironically.
Now world domination. Oh, you're still there.